Turn to Philippians chapter 1, and we're going to continue our study of this book tonight and try to finish this first chapter. We've looked at about half of it so far. What do you know about the book of Philippians? It's in the Bible. Good start. Okay, we're on a roll here. What do you know about the book of Philippians? Written by Paul. To who? To the Christians, to the church. The very first verse says it's written to the saints, the bishops, and the deacons who are at the church at Philippi. What's the book all about?
Joy.
Joy, encouragement. A book that talks to them about their role in the church, how to behave and to conduct themselves in the church, and how to take the church and continue to help it to grow. And we've talked about the fact that this idea of joy and rejoicing is found throughout this book, more saturated in this book than in any other. We've looked at the first 18 verses of chapter 1, where Paul talks to these brethren in a very passionate and compassionate way. He feels as close or closer to these brethren in this letter than we in many of the other letters. It's similar to what we see, but with his letters written to Timothy, and just the love that he had for Timothy is the love he has for this church. And he talks about the fact how often he prayed for them, how he thanked God for them. He talked about the fact in verses 12 through 18, how there were some brethren, there were some folks who were out preaching Christ, but they were doing so out of motives that were not necessarily the best motives. He says in chapter 1 and verse 15 that they were out preaching Christ out of envy and strife, supposing that they might bring some kind of ill will upon Paul, supposing they might bring added affliction to his chains. That's kind of sick, isn't it? To think that a group of people would go and preach Christ, the message was right, but that they would do it because they were so upset with Paul. They did it out of envy and strife. We finished last time in verse 18, and I just want to make sure we cover verse 18 one more time to make sure we understand it, because it's a verse that's oftentimes misused. Paul had been talking in verses 12 through 17, been talking about the fact that he had been in prison. Verse 12 says, but bad things have happened, but it's turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. Bad things have happened to me, but it's actually turned out for the betterment of the gospel. It's being spread. So he talked about the fact in verse 13, it's being spread to the palace guard. The gospel's being spread even while Paul is in prison. He talks about the fact in verse 14 that it's being spread because now brethren are more bold, because of Paul's example, are more bold to go and preach the gospel themselves without fear. And then verse 15, down to verse 17, he talks about these two different groups of people who are out preaching Christ. One's preaching Christ, verse 15, out of envy and strife. They're doing so from selfish ambition, verse 16, supposing that affliction to his chains. There's another group that's preaching Christ. The end of verse 15 says they're doing it from goodwill. Verse 17 says they're doing it out of love, knowing that he's appointed for the gospel. So he asks the question in verse 18, what then? What should I do about this? Can you imagine how frustrated Paul must have been that there were folks out preaching Christ, but their motives were so selfish, that their motives were based upon some feelings that they had towards Paul. Paul says, what do we do about this? What do I do about this? What do I think about this? What then, verse 18? Only that in every way, whether in pretense, that's that sickening group that was disguising their motives, whether it be in pretense or whether it be in truth, whether they have pure motives, only that Christ is preached. And in this I rejoice, yes, and will rejoice. And the point we need to understand from this is that Paul is not justifying someone preaching a doctrine that was not of Christ. We looked last time at Acts chapter 8, just to give an example. We need to understand that when the Bible uses the terminology that they were preaching Christ, It's not that they were teaching stories about Jesus. It's not that they were just going around and what many in the denominational world want preaching Jesus and preaching Christ to mean today is that they just preach about Jesus. That's not preaching Christ. That's part of preaching Christ, is to preach about Jesus. But preaching Christ is also preaching the doctrine of Christ. So it's obvious that these folks that Paul was concerned about, that it was their motives that were wrong, not their message. Their message was right on target. They were preaching Christ. It was their motivation that was improper. And Paul said, the best thing possible is happening. The message of Christ, the doctrine of Christ is being preached. And he says, if that's going to happen, then I will rejoice and I will continue to rejoice. But Paul was not condoning false doctrine. Paul was not condoning some other message. That would contradict everything else he said in his writings. You know, that why would he write the book of Galatians and say, why are you turning away from the gospel, and then be okay with these people preaching some other gospel? It's obvious that's not what he's talking about. Nicole?
I was just thinking that it's if you look at it from a different angle, that it's kind of good with this statement, because if you're looking at the messenger instead of the accurate message, we'd all be in trouble. So at least as long as the message is accurate, you don't have to worry about the messenger's shortfalls or shortcomings.
Sure.
Which is a good thing.
Sure. The messengers often have shortfalls, shortcomings, don't we? We often make mistakes and we're not perfect, but what's more important, the message or the messenger? What's going to save someone, the message or the messenger? Dirk brings up the statement that Jesus made about those who are not depending on the translation and maybe the paraphrase, those who are not with us are against us. The idea being, there's only two possible camps to be in, isn't there? There's not multiple camps. There's not multiple paths that we can choose. It's not that we can you can preach Christ and not preach Christ and then. But you could be somewhere in the middle where you're sort of preaching most of it, but you're not preaching all of it. And you're trying to, Paul talks in 2 Timothy chapter 4 about those who are heaping up teachers for themselves because they wanted somebody to say what they wanted to hear. Well, that's making you feel good, and that's putting the emphasis on the messenger instead of on the purity of the message. And so that's what we've got to grasp from this, is that Paul's greatest desire was that Christ would be preached. And we see that, we're going to pick up here in verse 19, we see that as we go through the rest of this chapter. Remember, one of the things we said as we introduced this book is that Paul sees everything in throughout his life, but particularly in this book, he sees everything in terms of the gospel. The most important thing to Paul was that the gospel be preached. And I think it's six times within this first chapter that you see that, particularly the word gospel is found, I think, about six times in this first chapter, where it didn't matter to Paul anything else except that the gospel was going to be preached. Look at verse 19. Paul says, "For I know that this," and I want you to see how many times Paul expresses a confidence that he has in God. You go back to verse 6, being confident of this very thing. He says in verse 19, "For I know that this will turn out." Look down in verse 25. "And being confident of this, I know." Paul had a confidence that he had placed in God that was unwavering. Here he was in prison. Would the average Christian question their Christianity if they were thrown in prison because of their Christianity? Would the average Christian, and this is up to us to make a judgment, but would the average Christian start questioning God? Why has this happened to me? Why has God allowed this to come about and to come upon me? We don't see any of that happening with Paul. Paul has a confidence. And he says in verse 19, "I know that this," and I don't know exactly what the "this" is, That this could be these brethren who are preaching out of impure motives. That this could be the fact that he's in prison and that that's not exactly where he wants to be. That may be a little bit better understanding. But he says, I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayer. How's he going to get out of prison? How's he going to get out? Through their prayer and supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. According to my earnest expectation and hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed. How strong. Think about the words that the Holy Spirit is choosing to have Paul write here and how strong they are. I know that what's happening here is going to turn out for my deliverance. How do you know that, Paul? Well, I know that because that's according to my earnest expectation and hope. How strong was Paul's expectation that this was going to turn out for his deliverance? He was confident. It's an earnest expectation. The Greek terminology there is literally that someone's head has been turned and they're looking in another direction. Paul had taken his eyes off of the conflict. Paul had taken his eyes off of the fact he's in prison. Paul had taken his eyes off the fact that these people were preaching out of impure motives. He said, that's not going to bother me. That's not going to detract me. The word literally means his head had been turned and he's looking in another direction. Where is he looking to? According to my earnest expectation and hope that I am not going to be made ashamed. Shame there is not active, it's passive. Meaning Paul says, I'm not going to allow anything to happen. I'm not gonna allow anything to happen which will cause me to be ashamed. Outside forces, it's passive. Outside forces acting in such a way that I would become ashamed. Do we allow sometimes outside forces to be active upon us in such a way that we become ashamed of being a Christian? That we become ashamed of the gospel? That we become ashamed of who we are? Paul says, that's not going to happen. That in nothing, there's not a single thing that's going to happen to me. In nothing I shall be ashamed. But, middle of verse 20, with all boldness. Think about just the emphatic nature of his words here. But with all boldness. Some translations there say with full courage. There's not. If you have all boldness, is there anything missing from your boldness? If you have full courage, anything lacking in your courage? Anything that Paul's doubting, any shame that might be creeping, there's nothing there. With all boldness, with full courage, as always, so now also. Prison's not going to stop me. Prison's not going to make me be ashamed of preaching Christ. Prison's not going to bring any doubt in my mind. I am with all boldness, as always, so now also. Christ will be magnified in my body. Whether by life or by death. Paul's in prison. Is it possible that at this point that Paul could have been put to death? He's not entirely certain whether he was going to get out of prison. We'll see a little bit more about what he says of that in a few verses. But he says, it doesn't matter what happens to me. Whether I live or whether they put me to death. Either way, what's going to happen? Christ is going to be magnified. The word is simple. It just means Christ's going to be made large. He's going to be exalted. He's going to be honored. He's going to be magnified in my body, no matter what happens to me. I wonder if we have that same determination. That we look at the world, that we look at Satan, and we say, I don't care what you do to me. Take your best shot. And whatever happens, Christ, he's not saying that no matter what happens, Christ is going to be seen in me. It's bigger than that. He's not saying no matter what happens, you know, they will see Christ active in my life. It's bigger. Paul says, no matter what happens to me, Christ is growing to grow larger and larger and larger and larger and larger and be exalted to the point that they don't see me, they see Christ. I wonder if that's us. You know, sometimes we get in situations, sometimes our young people get in situations where the circumstances they allow circumstances on the outside to be active in such a way, to act upon us in such a way that instead of Christ being magnified, Christ shrinks. Our Christianity sort of folds up a little bit and goes into a cave. Paul says, that's not going to happen to me. Verse 21, he says, for to me, whatever happens to me, he says, for to me to live is what? To live is Christ. What does that mean? To live is Christ. As long as I'm living, I'm going to preach Christ. As long as I am living, I am going to bring people to Christ. For me, living. What do you have to do to live? You've got to eat. You've got to drink. Do you have to breathe? You have to breathe. He says, whatever it takes, whatever's happening for me to live, just to be in existence, what's my existence going to be about? Christ. Did Paul have an occupation other than preaching? Sure he did. He made his livelihood making tents. But Paul didn't say, for me to live is to have a job. For me to live is to make tents. Does that mean he wasn't making tents? Well, sure he's making tents. But whatever he was doing, whatever his life encompassed, every bit of it, for me to live is Christ. Christianity was not some kind of a part-time position for him. It was his life. But to die was what? For me to live, Christ. To die is gain. If I die, guess what? That's even better. He's excited about living. He's, you know, some people have looked at this, at these verses and thought and said, well, you know, Paul was suicidal, you know, at this point. And it's like, he's not suicidal. He's realistic. And Paul says, I want to live in order that Christ might be magnified, but don't get fooled. Don't misunderstand. If I die, to me, that's gain. Is that our mentality? I think our mentality, maybe not ours, I think the world's mentality is when you die, you lose. It's the end. You're done. You know, live it the best way you can now, because when you die, it's over. Paul says, it's not over. This isn't the end of the game. For Paul, death was just merely a transition. It wasn't an end. It was just a transition to something even greater than what he had at that point. It's, where is it? 2 Corinthians chapter 5, where Paul says that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. Verse before that, he said, to be absent from the Lord is to be present in the body. When I'm in the body, I'm absent from the Lord. But he says, if I'm absent from the body, then I'm with the Lord. That's to die is gain. Verse 22. But if I keep on living, present tense, if I keep on living on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. What's that all about? Spreading the gospel. This will mean, if I live on in the flesh, this will mean more souls will be won for the cause of Christ. If you and I were facing death, if we were, some people try to do, if we were facing death and we were ready to make a deal with God. God, if you'll let me live, here's the deal I'll make with you. You ever seen movies where people do that? Maybe you've done that. This isn't Paul making a deal with God. This is Paul saying, this is what my life is. And if I get the opportunity to keep on living, he says, I'm going to keep on working. I'm going to keep on laboring. And that will mean more fruit. But he says at the end of verse 22, I don't know what's going to happen. I cannot tell what's going to happen. Verse 23, for I am hard pressed. What does the old King James say? I can't remember. Betwixt. New American Standard. Who's got a New American Standard? Is it got hard pressed?
Torn between.
The word literally means this idea of being hard pressed. You ever been between a rock and a hard place? You heard that expression? That's what this is. Paul is the phrase literally means he's in a strait. That's not straight line. That's in a strait. What does that mean? If you're in a strait, what's on this side? A wall. What's on this side? A wall. He says, I can't go anywhere. I am now between the two. What? I'm hard pressed between the two. Between living and between dying. He says, I've got these two situations that I'm facing, these two options, as you might think about it, and I am hard pressed. I'm under pressure. I have no idea which way it's going to go. What does he have? Verse 23, having, present tense, I am having a desire, a passionate desire, to depart and be with Christ. Is he suicidal? Do you have a passionate desire to depart and to be? See, depart is a tense in the Greek that just it's a one time thing. I've got an intense desire to depart, to be gone, and to be, different verb form. That's present tense, meaning I'll depart. That's done, and then be is continuous. I have a continuous over and over, over and over. I've got this desire to depart and to be continuous over and over, over, never stop being with Christ. Do we have that? How much do we want to go to heaven? Paul says, I really want to go to heaven. Friend? Right? Paul is not afraid of death because Paul recognizes that death is not the end. He's not looking at death in a frightening way. He's looking at it as gain. Nicole? Right. Look at verse 24. I'll come back and finish 23 in a minute. Verse 24, nevertheless, to remain, present tense, if I keep on remaining here in the flesh, that's more needful for you. So if I'm living, who does that benefit? Well, it's better for the brethren if I'm living. If I die, who's that better for? For Paul. So Paul says, I'm hard pressed between the two. I am having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is, and the English doesn't grab this, but it's emphatic in the Greek, which is very far better. Let's see, stay here on earth or go to heaven, which is better? Going to heaven is not just better, it's far better. And it's not just far better, emphatic in the Greek, it is much, 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 much better than being here. Do we think that? You know? The world wants to stay here. Paul says, I want to go and be with Christ. That's where I want to be. That's gain for me. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh, that's more needful for you. Verse 25. And being confident of this. There's his confidence again. Being confident of this. Being confident of what? Verse 24. That being remaining in the flesh was more needful for the brethren. He says, and being confident of this, I know. There's his confidence again. I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of the faith. So have you ever thought through something and then sort of worked it out at the end as you were thinking through it? Here's Paul. He's writing by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, and he says, here's the two options. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. I'm hard pressed between the two. I don't know which way, but I know what I'm needed for. And since it's better for me to stay here and souls to be saved and souls to be strengthened, he says, I know that's what's going to happen. I know that I shall remain and continue with you all. That's not just being present with them. The verb there literally means that I'm at your service. I'm there to help you. Continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith. Look over in verse 12 for just a second. Because we have the same word here as we had in verse 12. Verse 12, Paul said, but I want you to know, brethren, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. The word furtherance there, last week we said it was a word that was used of of that man or group of men that would go in front of the army, or they would go in front of the caravan of people, but they would be the ones out front who were cutting forward. That's what the word literally means, to cut forward, to cut a path so that the army or so that the nation could come through. So that they were furthering, they were cutting forward, cutting down the brush and anything that would get in the way so that the people could come through behind without any hindrance. That's what Paul says in verse 12, him being in prison. The bad things that have happened to me, he says, they've actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. He was cutting the way so that the gospel could come along with free course. That word furtherance is the same as the word progress over in verse 25, same Greek word. So he says, I know that I'm going to stay here, continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith. Paul says, me staying here is cutting forward. It's cutting down that path so that they could progress behind him. So that they could grow and continue in their faith. By the way, the end of this verse where it says, for your progress and joy of faith. I don't know if there's any translation that has this, but the definite article "the" is in the Greek before the word faith. So it's not just that they might have joy of faith in believing what they did in their hearts. That's a subjective faith. This is actually the objective faith, meaning that you might continue to progress and have joy in the faith in the gospel. And that might continue to be that which you go to. In verse 26, that your rejoicing for me may be more abundant in Jesus Christ by my coming to you again. Paul's in prison, doesn't know what's going to happen to him. But you get through verse 26, what's he pretty confident is going to happen? He's pretty confident he's going to get out. What's he going to do when he gets out? If there was a reporter there and asked him when he got out of prison, oh, great, you got out of prison. What are you going to do? I'm going to Disney World. Is that his plans? Oh, I want to get out. And I want to get out so I can go and preach the gospel. I want to get out so I can go see my brethren and encourage them and strengthen them in the faith. So Paul has spent the last several verses focusing in on himself. Not in some selfish way, but focusing on what's happening to him. Now, I want you to read through sometime those verses, especially verses 20 down through verse 23. And I want you to see how strongly can that be applied to me. In a personal way, how much is Christ being magnified in my body? In a personal way, how much is for me to live Christ? For me, how much is it that if I live on the flesh, will that mean if I keep living, if I were to live another 10 years, if I were to live another 15, if I were to live another X number of years, would that mean that more people would be saved? Or that it wouldn't matter if I lived any further on in the flesh, nobody else would be saved anyway? Paul recognized that was his purpose, and we need to recognize that's our purpose. If I live on in the flesh, will more people be saved because of it? That's a sobering question to ask ourselves, Dirk, and then friend. Yeah, same attitude Jesus had that in the garden. Lord, here's, if it be at all possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will. Lord, yours be done, friend. You know, look, hold your finger here for just a minute. Look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We've mentioned this passage a couple times in our introductory comments to this book, and all that had happened to Paul, but there's something in the list of 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and this goes along with Fran's comment, and that's why I want to go over here and see it, that stands out with me. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul talks about things that he had endured. You start in verse 23, 2 Corinthians 11, 23. He's talking about some of these other folks who were causing him troubles. He says, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. And then look at these things. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews five times I received 40 stripes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil and sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Now remember, this was written before the close of the book of Acts. After this book is written, you've got another 6 or 7 chapters of the book of Acts left to be written. So Paul's not even in prison in Rome. He hasn't even been arrested in Jerusalem yet. He hasn't gone through all of that yet when he writes these things. So this list isn't exhaustive. It's not done. But here's what I want us to see. He's listed all of these horrible things that have come upon him. Verse 28. Besides the other things, forget all of this. Forget all of these. They seem big. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily. What's that, Paul? My deep concern for all the churches. What was Paul's life all about? Was he having a pity party when he got in prison? Was he having a pity party when he's on this shipwreck? You know, was it all about, woe is me, this is horrible, all this is happening to me? Paul doesn't care what's happening to him. For me to live is Christ, no matter what. Bring on to me whatever you want. For me to live is Christ. For him to live was the church. What comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. Paul wanted the gospel to get to those who were lost and had never heard the gospel before. But you remember when we spent some time introducing this book and we had the maps, and you've seen it on your own maps of the missionary journeys, how Paul would go out from Antioch and he'd get to the end of his journey and then he'd trace himself right back through the same cities on his way back home, strengthening the churches, because he wanted more than anything else that they might not lose their faith. Come back to Philippians 1, verse 27. And we need to try to finish the chapter. Verse 27 is an incredible verse, because Paul's been talking about all of these things that are happening to him. Then you get to verse 27 and he says, okay, here's the deal for you. All of this has been happening to me. Now let's talk about you. Only, think about that, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ. The word conduct here is similar to the word citizenship that we're going to see when we get over to chapter 3, verse 20. When Paul talks about, in the Old King James, you got the word conversation. Let your conversation, and I hate that about the Old King James, because whenever I read conversation, I'm thinking person A talking to person B. Back to me, that's a conversation. 1611, when King James was written, that wasn't conversation. Conversation was just manner of life. So when you read that in the Old King James, conversation is just talking about how people live. But specifically here, Paul's talking about how you live as a citizen. He says you need to behave yourself like a good citizen. He's not talking about a citizen of Rome. He's talking about being a citizen of heaven. He says you need to behave yourself as a good citizen of heaven, and let that conduct and that behavior be worthy of the gospel of Christ. The word worthy there means that it is corresponding in weight. Here's my conduct, Lord. Here's my conduct. Here's my manner of life. Here's my citizenship in the kingdom of God. And here's the gospel of Christ. And Paul says, let your conduct be worthy of the gospel. Corresponding, literally, corresponding in weight. How does our life correspond in weight to the gospel? Does it matter if it does? Remember what Jesus said in John 12:48? He who rejects me and receives not my word has that which judges him. The word that I have spoken will judge him in the last day. Does it matter if my life corresponds in weight to the gospel? Here's our pattern. And he says, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ. He says that whether I'm absent, whether I continue to be absent, or whether I am able to come and see you, that I may hear of your affairs. And that, what are you doing? that you stand, it's present tense, that you are standing fast. You're not giving up. You're not quitting. You're like a soldier in the field. You're persistent. You're standing fast. Look at the unity. Right here in this verse, he begins an emphasis on unity. That you stand fast in one spirit. You got a capital S or a lowercase s on that word spirit? Lowercase. This is not talking about the Holy Spirit. He's not talking about that you stand fast in one Holy Spirit. He's talking about you stand fast in one spirit. That's the will, a person's will that he has. And he says your will needs to be one. That you all be united in one will. That you stand fast in one spirit with one mind or one soul. You're united in will. You're united in soul and in mind. You're thinking the same way and striving together. Look at the unity. That you are standing fast. One spirit, one mind, striving together. And the imagery there literally is side by side. When the armies went out to do battle, they would take their shields and they'd put one shield next to the next shield next, and there were no gaps. Shield next to shield, so that when they were going out, yes, it might be thousands of different men, but it was one united front and you couldn't tell that there were any gaps there. That's the word here. Striving together. No gaps. You're united. You're side by side striving and contending for what? The faith. How many faiths? Just one. For the faith of the what? The gospel. How many gospels? Look at the unity in this verse. Paul says, here's your life. And it needs to correspond in weight to the gospel. How many gospels? Just one. That I might hear of your affairs, that you're standing fast. You're not moving. And that as a body of people, you are united. You've got one spirit. You don't have different wills. Forget your own will. You're united in the will of God. Not my will, but your will be done. You're united in spirit. You're united in mind. You are side by side for the faith of the gospel. Were they going to have problems? Were they going to have trials? Were things going to try to get them to stop being united? Look at verse 28. And not in any way terrified by your adversaries. They had enemies. They had people that were against them. And that word adversaries literally means that they were lying down in wait. You couldn't see them, but they were ready just to pounce on you. He says, don't be terrified. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared of your adversaries. Because the very fact that you're not scared of them is evidence of their destruction. Proof of their perdition is the way the New King James says it. The fact that you're not scared of your adversaries is evidence that they are destroying themselves. And it's also evidence of your own salvation and that from God. For to you, verse 29, this is an interesting verse. For to you, it has been granted. What does the word granted mean? You've been given. You have been given a favor here. And that's what the word literally means. You've been given a favor here from who? Well, verse 28 says it's from God. You've been given a favor. Okay, what's the favor? To you it's been granted on behalf of Christ not only to believe in Him. Folks, believing in Christ is a favor that God has given to us. What's another favor? But also to suffer for His sake. We don't look at suffering as a favor that God has given to us, do we? Paul did. And he says, you've got the same conflict which you saw in me, and now you hear is in me. Paul says, the end of verse of chapter 1, you're going to have adversaries, you're going to have persecutions, you're going to have suffering, and all this is going to try to get you to stop being united, and all of this is going to try to get you to turn away from Christ. And he says, don't let it move you. Verse 27 is the key. That you stand fast, don't move. That you work together, you strive together, you contend earnestly for the gospel together. You've got to be united. And next week we're going to get into chapter 2, but ignore the chapter break here. Chapter breaks sometimes get in the way. There's not a new thought when you get to chapter 2. First word you got in verse 1 is therefore. He continues the thought of unity right through that. We'll pick up in chapter 2 and look at that next time.